Okay, hello everyone. My name is Rick Traer and I'm the CEO of the Canadian Sport Tourism Alliance. Welcome to our sixth COVID-19 webinar that we're making available to the sport tourism industry on a complimentary basis. Today, we have over 200 individuals registered for the webinar that will be presented by Dr. Norm O'Reilly at the University of Guelph and with T1 Consulting. Couple of housekeeping items before we get started. Everyone's mic should be on mute to prevent any background noise. And for any questions, please use the chat function, which is available at the bottom of your screen. We'll try to answer as many questions as we can during the webinar. And for those that come in a little bit later and beyond the scope of the 1 hour we have scheduled, we'll try to answer those online on our website. A copy of the presentation along with the video and audio will be available on our website usually within 24 hours of the completion of the seminar. So thanks again for participating, and now over to you, Norm.
All right. Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me. Let me just share my screen here. Perfect. So what I'm going to go through, and some of you have probably seen a little bit of this before. Hopefully that looks good. Looks good. Is the Canadian Sponsorship Landscape Study. And so this is a study we've done every year now, currently in its 14th year. And it's kind of become the bit of the go-to lens for what's happening in sponsorship in Canada. And I've presented, I think, six times now at the CSTA conference, including was supposed to be in Edmonton a couple of months ago. So this will be the version of that. So this study has really become something that people are interested in, and I'm happy to, in the Q&A today or post this discussion, respond to anything more, add to additional questions, etc. It's a study that's done much like this webinar, without a specific budget. There's a number of organizations that support it. We present it every year at a number of conferences in English and French. IMI provides the background safe data collection tool. Sponsorship Marketing Council of Canada is a partner in distributing the study and helping us get responses from brands, which, you know, is very challenging. And so definitely acknowledgement to those groups. Here's what I thought I would just kind of contextualize today. So as a lot of you are dealing with, the world is shifting and the world is changing. And so what we've got here is some data, amazing data that was collected pre-COVID. Our 2019 data collection, as many of you know, and hopefully you'll respond to the survey, is going on right now. And then we've kind of got the reality of what's going to happen post-COVID. So what I'm doing is presenting kind of the results. We're going to talk about what's happening now, and then I've done some extensions that I'll talk about at the end into kind of sponsorship and the COVID reality. So the story before, leading up to, and then kind of what we're going to add, hopefully when we have a return to some level of people traveling and attending sporting events and going to music festivals and all those things we'd like to see happen again. So that's the general kind of idea. If you want the results, in addition to the version that Rick's going to send you, which is slightly different because I've done some updates, but the report, English and French, white papers, etc., are all available anytime you want them at sponsorshiplandscape.ca, sondagecommandite.ca. If you're interested in the French versions, you can flip back and forth quite easily. And so all the previous years are up there if you're ever looking for data, and a lot of people use it as an industry resource, which is its initial idea. So what I'm going to start and go through is going to take you through the 13th annual results of the study, what we're finding, the trends, and then into that extension for this COVID. And then I think it will be highly interesting for this group, given that most of you, if not all of you, are from the not-for-profit world. Some, I guess, are not, but most are related to tourism. A lot are, or a lot partner with not-for-profit sport organizations or sport tourism organizations. Going to do a quality kind of deep dive into that group. And so we did this qualitative study when we collected in the 13th annual that I'll share today. All right, so we'll get into a little bit of the results. So as those that have followed this, the study may have noted over the years, we've had a number of years as annual studies, as you know, are pretty blah. Nothing new, slight increases, same trends. that's happened in a number of the years with the Canadian sponsored landscape study. 2018 was not one of those years, and there's been other years in the past I'll mention in a second, and quite clearly 2020, with the disastrous numbers we'll see when we get to collect that data down the road, will also be equally painful in a different kind of way. So some interesting things that kind of happened too. So back in 2007 was the first time we did this study, and the rationale had come from the Canadian Sponsorship Forum a couple of years before, and people like yourselves had said, we'd like some Canadian data. We've had all this US data, all this French data, all this English data, this Australian data. Let's get something new. And so we kind of created this study and had our first crack at it. And we all of a sudden knew the Canadian brands were spending just around $1 billion and that our activation ratio was 43 cents on the dollar. And here were some of the big trends. So it was brand new. It was very exciting. 2010 was the fourth annual study. And we presented at the Paralympic Games in Whistler that year. And the really big news then, if you recall back, and very similar, hopefully, to what we'll see in 2021, was that sponsorship was deemed to be recession-proof. So you recall 8-9, there was this very negative, and into 10, this very negative financial recession that hit the United States very hard, but hit Canada pretty hard, and was not fun for people with investments and extra spending, and people's spending was constrained. It was a very negative time for a lot of people. And sponsorship just continued to grow, very, very positive. So some great results from that year. So hopefully we'll see that kind of going forward. In 2013, and this was highly relevant, we talked about this term of festivalization. It's actually been coined now and is used quite broadly. And then we presented that year on the same topic at CSTA with quite relevant. So this idea that festivals, so we'd seen sport was dominant and arts and causes. And then this big change came around the idea of the festival. And so people wanted to get to places where you can actually have experiences. And so this really fit with a lot of the environments that we work in sport tourism. So the idea of festivalization rose up as one of the three. And I'll show some data in a little bit to back that up. 2014 was the first of a couple of pro sport renaissances. And so pro sport had been very flat. And a lot of you know this. And other areas like amateur sport, et cetera, were increasing the proportion of the curve till 2014. A bunch of big things happened. MLS, outdoor NHL hockey games, Winter Classic, the NHL taking control of its all-star game, CFL upping the ante with things like with their partnerships with like Wendy's, moving away from rink boards and signage on the sidelines and getting really interactive and adopting social media activations. And so pro sport just jumped up with a proportion of the overall curve. That was a huge story that year. And then not too much kind of since then. So 2018 years, so to give you an idea of the study, that's why we're a bit delayed, is the study measures the financial year the year before. So right now we're collecting from organizations based on the 2019 year. So it's got a bit of a lag. And so what we found in 2018 is what we're going to talk about today, but pretty relevant, I think, to what we would have seen in 2019, and hopefully will inform us what we'll see coming out. And I'm going to compliment that a bit later on. And so 2018, we have this really positive story for sponsorship, which is kind of odd to talk about in today's environment, but hopefully it's going to set the stage, as I talked about. Much, much smarter, all three stakeholder groups in Canadian, much more balanced use of rights, fees, and activation. I'm going to get some data on all this in a second. Getting bigger, the bigger players asserting themselves, maybe some bias, and then these real advancements in terms of some of the more sociological things, like the roles of gender and sponsorship, proper use of objectives, etc., that I'll kind of get through. So we have this really wonderful story to tell. How am I going to tell that story? Well, I'm going to go through it in kind of 9 steps, explain to you what the study is, who the stakeholders are, who we sample from, the industry data we get, overall industry size, then we'll talk about strategic elements, the sponsorship deal itself, activation, servicing, and evaluation, which are the three kind of core tactical elements of sponsorship, and then bring it into the so what, and then get into that deep dive into not-for-profit, and then do the kind of the extension into the COVID kind of reality. So what is this study? Just so everyone knows, and you're not critiquing the statistics behind it, we're talking about a form of research that is really based on, you know, the best data we can get from industry. So it's a snowball sampling, counts on people to respond to it, anonymously done, English and French. So it's not perfect data. But over time and now many, many years and many, many responses, we're very, very confident in it. each of the three groups, we ask a different types of questions. So on the brands and the sponsors, it's very much about how much they invest in sponsorship. For the properties, a lot of you, it's very much in how much revenue you receive. And then for the agencies, also some of you who work for either of those groups, it's the billings that come in from sponsorship work. So those are the three kind of main unit of analysis. We collect online, but we also still allow email submissions. The odd person still will try to fax or mail because there is financial information, but largely now we've moved to online. We then look at a bunch of analysis and themes. Sorry, I don't know why my M went across there, but compare, and then we do some modeling, and then we do some deep dives and some longitudinal work into those different kind of trends. So who's the sample? Well, we've been very fortunate. So over the course of the study, we now have 4,075 responses. And just to clarify, when you see the number across the bottom, 07 to 2019, that's the year we collected the data, and it's based on the previous year's financial statements. So in 2006, data is what's reported in the 2007 study. So keep that in mind as we go forward, just as we kind of do it. The blue refers to properties, always easy to get property responses. The red is agencies, and the gold color is sponsors. So we have a up and down across the board. The two big spikes you see is one, the first year of the study, where we had a number of students. I was at Laurentian University at the time, made thousands of phone calls back in the day. 2010 is when we first went online. And then you can see there's kind of this fatigue comes in. And then 2016 is when we restarted our partnership with the Sponsorship Marketing Council of Canada. And our numbers have been pretty good and pretty solid ever since. So great data. Here's how we collect the data. So as I mentioned, we've hit as many as one time. We got every response online, but usually we get a few others. And we have had a mix of English and French respondents. Often it's linked to where the conferences are we're presenting at. And so there's been some when Sponsorship X was in Montreal, for example, in 12 and 13, a real higher response rate in French from Quebec. Now, a lot of people that work in French-speaking parts of the country often work in English and do respond in English, so there could be a bit of a bias in that number as well. Here's a bit of a typical snapshot of who a sponsor is. This gives you an idea of who's responding. So we had 41 sponsors and responded 2019 on the 2018 kind of year. And you can see their range from average size to very, very large organizations. On average, they're spending $3.3 million in sponsorship, up to those that responded that spent as high as $25 million. So people answer those range questions. So they're not, everything's meant to be very anonymous. We asked their largest sponsorship, how many sponsorship deals they do. You can see between 2 and 60, an average of 14. So very active in the sponsorship space. You can see some numbers there around the decision.
Excuse me, Norm.
Yes.
Norm, I'm so sorry. So sorry to interrupt you. We're not seeing the slides move as you're talking.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's strange. It's moving for me. Can you see it now?
Yeah.
Yes, now we can.
I wonder if it's the full screen. Okay, sorry about that. Well, I'll click through them quickly here. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we can see it now.
Okay, so that's what I talked about. That's weird. If it's okay, I'll just leave it like this then as a small screen. Those are the years I went through. So I'll just go to where nothing was too important until we get to the data. So here's where I was at. My apologies. Here's where I was at the number of respondents. And as I talked about, so the 4,000 distinct responses over the course of the study, here was the English, French, and the online group. And so here's where I was. So this is the a typical sponsor and who they talk. Now, I worked my way around kind of the outside. So we also ask under money mix, what proportion they spend against for-profits or not-for-profits, cash versus value in kind or contra. So they're giving you product or service in lieu of cash. Who are they targeting? We'll get into gender a bit later on, but are they targeting female customers through their sponsorship? Are they trying to reach males or gender non-specific by number of deals and by dollars? So give you a bit of a snapshot of the typical sponsor. So pretty big brands who are investing quite a bit in this group. An important point about the sponsor sample is clearly we're only talking about Canadian companies who sponsor. Those who do not would not be accounted for or included in this study. So that's an important thing when you think about what we're talking about. On the property side, so this would include a lot of sport and sport tourism type organizations. These are the groups that receive the dollars from the brands. We get quite a great sample every year because these are organizations that want the data, and then obviously it's all shared afterwards. So you can see the decision makers there, very senior, typically male, but a reasonable one-third. Reasonable is not ideal, but a one-third proportion is female in the respondents that come through. The reach of these properties, so we get a mix of international properties that are operating in Canada. So you can think about a TIFF would be someone who would fit that description. I'm not sure whether they responded or not. Canada, and then down to the provincial and the local levels. In terms of their sponsors, on average, they had 27 sponsors, so very big, very much skewed by some properties who have a lot of sponsors, in 100 plus. And then you can see where they come from in terms of industry. Some are from retail is the dominant one, but they come from across the boards in terms of industries that invest. Big organizations, on average, $265 million in terms of their annual budget, 61% at headquarters in Ontario, just under six people working primarily on sponsorship. And then you can see the sources of revenue on the left. So give you a snapshot of who the property respondents kind of are. On the agency side, again, very active, and we feel very good in this data. We had 66 responses. By my best estimates, and some of you may have better ones, there's about 500 agencies ranging from big ones with 100 plus staff down to individuals working in sponsorship who are acting as a third party either on behalf of brands or properties. And there's a large group here. They tend to be based in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver, with a few exceptions. They tend to work for very larger properties, not the small ones. And their unit of analysis, I mentioned earlier, is billings. So you can see on average, this group had 5.3 million billions from sponsorship, million dollars in billings from sponsorship, to a high of 29 million. So sponsorship makes up 59% of those billings. And the average number of sponsorships they worked on that year was 81. So very active, very engaged agencies. And you can see the areas they work in, with sales being the most common, but certainly only not the only thing. A lot of research, evaluation, activation, staffing, and a number of other areas that they work on. In terms of who they work for, not just the big brands. They work for half of the clients are sponsors, but about a quarter are sponsors. And then a quarter, interesting enough, for other agencies. There's a lot of interagency work that goes on. For example, a media agency working for the agency of record of a big brand to launch an activation could be something that describes it. And a very positive thing we found there, that note at the bottom, is as each year goes by, more and more Canadian agencies are defining themselves as a sponsorship agency. So specialization in the field and expertise continues to grow, which is very exciting overall. In terms of industry data, so this is kind of some of the really powerful data points that people really like to know and use in their pitches, et cetera. Is proportion overall of marketing budgets. You see it kind of went up gradually and now it's kind of stayed flat. Clearly, there's an impact of a sample on who responds. If you get some very big brands or small ones, it influences. But we're down in the neighborhood of around a fifth to a quarter of budgets, marketing communication budgets of brands that sponsor in Canada are invested in sponsorship. So a significant amount kind of going forward. So something that's very positive for the industry. In terms of how much these brands spend, now we use a striated sampling technique to kind of come with this estimate. So clearly there's a margin of error. But in 2018, it was about $1.8 billion were spent on rights fees by Canadian companies. Now this may look like a drop from 2017, but in fact it wasn't, because the activation ratio, which is the number of dollars spent per dollar on rights fees. So ours is 68. So 68 cents on the dollar, much lower than other countries. We see the US, it's England, France, closer to 2-1, sometimes higher than 2-1 in this ratio. But our number had gone up significantly since a 53%, I believe, was the ratio in 2017. So that leads us to an overall spend for the first time of over $3 billion in 2018. I'll extend that in a little bit to talk about, we expected that was the same, if not higher, in 2019, and obviously forecasting a decrease for 2020, but a lot of dollars being spent. And if you look at the history since we've started doing the study, it was a 5.06% cumulative annual growth rate over the course of the study, which is very positive and shows that ongoing growth in sponsorship. Into the strategic elements, and these are some questions we added, and a number of you and delegates at CSTA have contributed to these ideas, to new questions we added about 4 or 5 years ago, to try to get more into the strategic side of it and saying, why are sponsors deciding? You know, we all talk about this, oh, I don't have the relationship, or you know, that CEO, she likes to golf, so she only sponsors golf. And that's largely been shown to be, in most cases, very, very modest. So this is the idea of bias, which is partway down. And we saw a bit of a spike in bias from sponsors in 2018, which is a bit concerning. But generally speaking, most sponsorship decisions are made for the right reasons. Are you going to help reach the customers with the passions that we want? Are you following industry trends? Do you have the assets that are going to allow us to achieve our marketing objectives? So when you're dealing with potential brands that are going to sponsor you, obviously in a post-COVID environment, you've got to be delivering the things that they want, the marketing outcomes that they want. Do the people that you have as members and followers and participants fit with the customers they want to reach? Those kind of thinkings are very, very powerful and quite positive. In terms of the largest sponsorship category, we're interested every year in what brands spend their most money on. And this is kind of back moved around between festivals, pro sport, and amateur sport. In 2018, it was a big spike for professional sport, up to 56%. If you took the largest sponsor within each of those respondents, the largest of those that did pro sport was triple all the other areas. So $1.9 million in terms of the average deal. So very significant what was spent versus triple versus amateur sport. So pro sport really, really reported well. Here's a slide that really highlights those trends I talked about with the pro sport renaissance. And this is the history of rights fees, not activation spend, but rights fees spend by industry. Now, there's a number of other industries on here that don't show up. We measure arts and municipalities, and it's a variety of other areas, and they just don't have high enough answers to come on here. So if you add them up, they don't add to 100%. But the main areas, the main five are on here, and you can see pro sport has continued to take a larger and a larger chunk overall. Festivalization, you can see that high areas of the gold line, which has kind of faded a little bit. And one of the reasons there is that a lot of events that might have characterized them as festivals in the past, and pro sport has been acting like festivals. So some of those allocations have been shifted, or the way the respondents describing them by attribution have shifted. So we've seen some. Another big question that comes on this one is the role of cause. We'll get into this a bit at the end, and that fits with a lot of what you're doing. Is causes continue to be quite low. And the reason is, and I'll show this in more detail later on, is that cause is considered to be an integral part of any sponsorship in most cases, not all, but in most, but not necessarily a category that brands invest in. So it's an important thing. And I will build that out quite a bit, a little bit later on. If you convert that slide into dollars spent, so again, there's a margin of error here, but if you take our overall assessment of that $3.02 billion on the $1.8 billion, and you put that into spend by the area, you can see the numbers that are estimated to go to amateur sport and pro sport. I focused on today, given the CSTA, but you can see those two groups. So even when the pro sport continues to get a larger proportion, the numbers going to amateur sport are still relatively in the same ballpark because the overall pie has been growing. So that's something to think about as you look at the property mix. So the other thing people say is, well, are all the dollars in Canada going to just the COC and TIFF and the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens? No, that's not the fact. And we like to show this every year. And the trends are actually going in an alternate direction. So if you look at the international and the national properties, so you've got 13-year averages in red, and you've got the last data we have, 2018 year reported in 2019, in gold. You can see that about a third is going to national properties, about a tenth is going to international, but the other 50 to 60% are going to multi-provincial, provincial, regional, or local properties. And local and the big ones both went up last year. So we had this kind of idea that the reports are saying sponsors want to go very local, reach people, grassroots, da-da-da, or they want the big reach of an international or national brand. So that's one of the themes that really came out that year, and fully expect that would have held in 2019. Here's another one we like to share on strategy, and this is something that kind of repeats itself most years, and that there's always a very different forecast. And we see this in some COVID data, which I'm going to share in a little bit, is that sponsors have a much more optimistic or more pessimistic view than properties and agencies. Properties and agencies think things are going to grow. Sponsors generally think things are going to be less positive. So that's a common thing to think about as we kind of go forward. And there's some attributes with the deal itself. So obviously the deal between the sponsor and the property with involvement of agencies on both sides. So one weakness we've seen year over year and continue to in the Canadian sponsorship world is the use of value in kind contra product services in lieu of cash kind of sponsorships. We always encourage, particularly the smaller properties and the medium-sized ones, to consider more about investing in these contra cash kind of parts of the world. And so about less than $8 out of $10 are allocated to cash. And we'd like to see numbers higher than that, which you do see in other markets like the United States. In terms of what the most valuable benefits that a sponsor wants to see in their deal, this is, we've got the last 3 years there. So you can see 16 is in reported in 17, 17 reported in 18, 18 reported in 19, go red, blue, and gold, respectively. And you can see the things that are very dominant here. One is exclusivity. So one of the ideas we often hear in sponsorship is exclusivity is dead. Not true at all. Sponsors every year tell you the last thing they want to see is one of their competitors anywhere near something they've invested in. Just the nature of what they define as exclusive has very much shifted. But they want the focus to be on them and not any of their competitors. So if you're working with Coke, they don't want Pepsi products anywhere to be seen, and vice versa. And so a variety of those pieces are very, very important. You see things that hospitality and tickets are very, very high. You can see that ownership of an area. So we call this own properties or owned something that you have control of and can create. So a brand wants something that they can really come in and own and buy. I mentioned earlier the CFL example of Wendy's owning Halftime. Like those are the kind of things that are really, really powerful. Or Nissan doing test drives. These are the kind of things where the brand can really get in there, do their stuff, build their social, access athletes or celebrities or cheerleaders, whatever the case may be, to really drive the efforts that they're doing around it. So they want ownership of an area and own property, proprietary rights to some kind of asset that they can really do. And that comes across. And you can see some of the others that that are a little bit lower on the 5-point scale. In terms of activation, so we showed this a bit before, the 0.68, but the activation ratio is that ratio of what's spent on activation versus a rights fee. So quite simply, on average, if every brand was spending $100 on their sponsorship, on average, they're spending $68 to activate it, to do associated advertising, to build out a property, to launch a website, to design some promotions, to send their CEO, et cetera. Whatever the case may be, this is the investment we're seeing later on. And in the early days of the study, the 0.43, the 43 cents was the talk of the very first time we presented the study at the former Sponsorship X conference in Vancouver. And that was kind of where it was really powerful that it was so low. So the US numbers are usually 2.1, 2.2, 1.9, where we have been very, very low. And there's a number of reasons for that. We don't have the high school sports. Our culture is a little bit different. We have much more government involvement. But we're still way behind. So look at the same numbers in Australia and England and France, as I mentioned, we're very far behind. So you really got to put efforts in to get your sponsors and yourselves to activate more. A lot of properties are investing more in activation. I'll show some of that data in a second. That said, very positive trending the last 4 or 5 years as that number continues to go up, and 68 cents was our highest recorded since 2012. Here's some of that US data, which comes from IEG, which I mentioned. You can see that big gap in between over the history of the study. So that's something we really need to narrow as an industry, obviously, once COVID goes on. Now, we asked the same kind of question around what you, as we saw earlier, by industry area you invest in around activation. So what do you do with those activation dollars we just talked about, those 68 cents on the dollar? A variety of different things, and it's really an ugly slide, but I'll talk through it a bit and it will make some sense. So branded content or own property is that first area that we just talked about, has continued to kind of go up and down, and in recent years has taken a larger spot. Advertising, as you can see, the black one has gone up and down all over the place. It's largely related to this pro sport renaissance because those big properties are including a lot of advertising to let everybody know about the sponsorship that they're doing. Social media is an interesting one. As it came to be, it really grew and then it's flattened. And we did a deep dive the year before asking what social media, what we really found was social media for a number of years is something the brands invested in. Now it's just another channel and it's expected to be included and be part of it. So they're not investing extra activating. It's kind of an expectation. PR has kind of really been on the decline, and that's largely because the growth of sponsorship and the growth of social media. You don't necessarily need those pieces as much as in the past. Product sampling up and down. So all over the place, very sample dependent, very trend driven, but very important to think about all the different channels that brands are investing in. So to dig a little deeper on that, we added this question again 4 years ago. We started asking sponsors, where do you get the most return on when you spend an activation dollar? What brings back the most? And there's a real big shift in 2018 away from these larger promotional driven items and really into these experiential based stuff. So for the first time in a while, we saw that hosting and hospitality and product sampling were at the top. Advertising was there number three, and some of the others that had moved up dropped down a little bit. So this idea that people, and this is obviously COVID has crushed this idea that people need to taste, touch, use, drive, feel, wear a product or a service to really get intrigued by it, to link it to the sponsor, and then drive purchase down the road. So very, very interesting and very powerful finding that was driving a lot of what was going out there. On the property side, and this is probably fits well when you think about a place where the sponsor can do what they want to do, properties tell us when they build something out, a branded content piece that the brand can come in and own and utilize and drive, that's really where they think their partners get their most ROIs. This is a bit of a, you know, talk about your partner and where do you think they are? So a bit of an extension question. Then digging into that branded content, I put this slide together just to kind of have a look at that piece because we saw a bit of a drop on the sponsor side. But you can see that it historically in the last 5 years, it's been a very, very strong driver of ROI for brands and properties, and then under the opinion of agencies, where they get it from. So something really important to think about is, are you creating something that a sponsor can really wrap its head around in terms of branded content? And I mentioned this a few seconds ago, this, and we only started measuring this in 2013 because the years before we just had assumed it had been zero. But this is a really interesting development in the field, and a very positive one, is properties are now realizing, wait a minute, like if I want my sponsors to renew, sign again, go up and be happy, they got to be achieving their objectives. So on average, Canadian properties in the last year we measured the study allocated 10 cents of every dollar in revenue they got from sponsorship back towards activating it. So quite simply, you have a $100,000 sponsor, you take 10,000 of that, you put it in an account, and say that money is earmarked to make that sponsor happy, to help them activate, to drive the ROI of that. Brilliant move. And a lot of you I know have been, who are properties and agencies, have been doing that. And then within that, the most common tactics being used are hosting, hospitality, advertising, and branded content. So the way their property reinvestment and activation was being used fits well with the previous data. So very, very positive response. On to the second of the three tactical areas, which is servicing. We see this every year, and it's a really powerful finding and one that that we've seen some real positive improvement on. So we ask the sponsors to both evaluate, you know, are that we getting delivered? So these are, there's a variety of things at the sample there that we say, hey, performance expectations. How well did your property partners perform on this? How much do we expect it to go? And the value expected and the value provided almost always shows a major significant difference, as you can see there. The only one that wasn't was the protection of rights at the bottom. So a lot of us as properties and the agencies representing properties think our sponsor brands are happy, but in most cases they're not. And they feel that they're not getting the service they view. And really this has been a consistent answer for most of the 13 years of the study. Then we also asked to see this question we just started the last 2 years. Are properties also investing in servicing? Now that we've been sharing that servicing is an issue and people are starting to know that, like activation, are they putting money back in? And yes, we're starting to see that. This can be human resources investments. This can be sharing in cost to deliver something. This could be extra signage or contracting, et cetera, running to make sure that everything that's delivered on in that contract, and that was up to 16% of the servicing back. So very, very positive trend there, even though we're still seeing there this this gap between service value expected and service value provided to sponsors by properties. So very important one to kind of think about. Then the last of the three kind of tactical areas is around evaluation and ROI. And so this is one where we saw a massive improvement. So this was from the year before, the 2018 study, 2017 data. And this was very typical the previous years, this total misalignment between what sponsees or properties thought that their brand sponsor partners were feeling about ROI and what the sponsors told us. So the blue was the sponsor, the red was the property. So total misalignment. This property thought their partners were happy. The sponsor said, you know what, I didn't get that much out of this. However, in 2018, we saw this really amazing and positive shift where there was almost perfect alignment between what properties thought their sponsors were getting and what sponsors reported they were getting in terms of ROI. So a huge and positive shift. Still not the highest mean you might like, a 3.6 or 3.66 on a scale of 5, but very, very positive trend for the industry overall. We also ask about evaluation investment. So how much of your rights fees do you allocate towards evaluation as a sponsor? What kind of equivalent? And we've seen this go generally down to a bottoming out in 2014 to a spike to kind of being a little flatter. So it's not necessarily a negative thing because evaluation is a lot of, you know, it's gotten a lot cheaper. You can run a Twitter analytics evaluation if you've got a reach metric. You can do online surveying much easier than you used to be. You don't necessarily need to go out and do a major cross-country study with a big research agency to get it done. So there's been an efficiency scale here too. But again, we would like to see a bit more. So digging in deeper, we added this question in 2015 around pre-sponsorship evaluation. So the idea here is that, well, if you thought about it ahead of time, it's quite likely you did it in a more sophisticated way, right? So of the money invested in valuation, we see extremely low numbers, which tells us this is very bad. And in most cases, and a lot of you I'm sure can relate, like, oh crap, we had to provide a report to our partner. What are we going to do? And you go throw together some pictures, you put together some media reports, you throw together a summary of the event, but nobody really thought about to ask the sponsor what their objective was to figure out a way to measure that and report back to them and say, hey, yeah, sponsor X, here's what we did and here's how we delivered. So there's a real need industry-wide, as a lot of you know, to really improve our, not necessarily our spend, seems to be okay, but how we do evaluation is very important. Property evaluation, similar to the other ones, we said, well, on the property side, so the sponsors aren't getting what they want, are we stepping up? So 5% of the properties are, 5% of the money they're getting, they're putting back into valuation, which is good. Again, a very low number, only 1 in 10 of those dollars being used for pre-sponsorship evaluation. So the intent is good, the dollars are being set aside, the action on it and the how, not really where it needs to be, so but generally trending in a good way. On the other side of there, you see the middle box, not so ideal. Just under a third of the respondents are spending nothing on evaluation and then wondering why they're not renewing probably. And then about half are spending nothing on the more quality evaluation, which we call that pre-sponsorship evaluation. A new question we asked in 2019 based on 2018 data was for agencies. And we wanted to say, okay, what kind of techniques and measures are you using? So clearly there's money being set aside by sponsors and properties for evaluation. Are they doing it themselves? Probably not. What are their agencies doing to do it? And so really, really interesting stuff. So really a bunch of different answers we got, but we kind of themed them up and you can see proprietary and custom models, baseline, benchmarking. So all the things you want to hear, brand exposure, social media metrics. So there's the agencies when they're involved are clearly seeing high quality stuff. And then the spend is there, but that pre-sponsorship is not. So it's just a matter of timing evaluation earlier and using a little bit better methods. So much improvement and so close. We're very hopeful that the 2019 results collected in 2020 will show that we're finally kind of there. We have this question we ask every year around what keeps you up at night about sponsorship. Just showing it again, we get basically the same answer almost every year. And that's that, you know, meeting ROI, how do we measure it? So it's this real interesting thing. So we've got this dynamic where we're not necessarily doing it as well as we can, and we're certainly not timing it as well as we should, yet it's keeping us up at night. So there's this real disconnect. And if you went all the way back to 2006, you find that was a big issue all the way along. So we continue to have this issue, yet we, for some reason, don't go all the way to kind of solve it. All right, to wrap up. So what are we going to do going forward? So 2018, and then I'm going to get into the deep dive and then the extension. 2018 was a glorious year for sponsorship in Canada. We hit $3 billion, really positive trends in activation, evaluation, and servicing. good numbers in terms of growth and gender equality and the way things were being spent. Some things that need some improvement and some things that maybe are suggesting the future, like this bimodal distribution between you got to spend big, that sponsors want big properties with huge reach, or they want small properties with very local engagement, and the in between ones, like a provincial-wide thing, or maybe a local festival that's got larger aspirations than just local, might have some challenges. But those are very early stages, and we'll learn about those more over the years. So that kind of summarizes what I talked about. All right, then the deep dive into not-for-profit. So this is really interesting, and so there's this ongoing thing, and I mentioned the cause stuff earlier on of what's going on. So if you take the numbers we have, the $1.8 billion in sponsorship, and 42.5% of that went to not-for-profit partners, about $760 million was going to not-for-profit organizations in Canada as sponsorship right fees that year. When you build it in a little bit deeper and say, okay, these are likely from these two categories, the amateur sports stuff you saw before, but not cause. So I'd kind of built out these two. Amateur sport and cause is where most of the not-for-profit world would fall, so including a large number of the properties involved in sport tourism, we can see this general decline. Now, that's been buffered by the fact that the overall industry's gone up. This is percentage data. So we don't notice that, but we're getting our butts kicked by pro sport, by festivals, by arts. These groups are really taking a larger chunk of the pie, but we're not noticing it. So if you use the old investment matrix, Boston Consulting Group, we'd be called dogs, right? Very, very, very small. And the other ones like municipalities, education, image, they're very, very tiny, but have a similar dynamic of being dogs. So it fits across the not-for-profit category. So we wanted to ask a little bit more. So we asked sponsors, how important is the cause to you when you decide to do it? And this is really powerful. So only 9% told us it was important, and 15% said, we don't care about cause at all. So there's these two little groups at each end that cause is vital or cause is irrelevant. The majority in between is very positive. It's very strategic. It's either based on the impact that cause can provide, or most importantly, does it fit with what we want to achieve as our organization? This fits right now with the COVID data we're seeing, where sponsors are moving their money towards things that fit with COVID, frontline workers, healthcare, food supplies, all these kind of things. So really sponsors care about the fit. So you want to fit very clearly in with that particular group. Then we asked the properties, how important is cause and your ability to attract those sponsors? And we got just two groups, bunch of answers, but they kind of cluttered up into two. And 8 out of 10, as you'd expect, said it's very important. And you saw those four answers before, so it makes sense. And then some said moderately or fairly, but very few said low. So they're kind of aligned thinking that way, except for the ideas that it's not just important, it's got to be linked to either impact or the ROI fit with that particular brand. Here's a quick quote. You can have a look, which I thought captured a lot of things. It's from one particular sponsor. Then we also asked all of the respondents, so sponsors, properties, and agencies, you know, investment by sponsors and causes decline. And I talked a bit about this before because it's been a perplexing one for those of us that are researching this stuff. Why do you think this is the case? And there's a whole bunch of data, and we kind of grouped this into three overall themes, and then there's a couple of illustrative quotes before each one. So the first one was navel gazing. And so we have this real issue, particularly in not-for-profit properties, that we think we're the best story, we're the best cause. And so there's this real kind of navel gazing. And so just if you're a cause, compare yourself to cancer. If you're sport, compare yourself to the Canadian Olympic Committee. And so we're as opposed to our stories, ours is really good. No, that brand is looking at us across a variety of things. Does it fit with them? Does it have impact? So we've got to stop navel gazing. Second is, wow, there's a lot of competition. And I even need to be reminded of this by the respondents, which is so true. There are 3,000 plus active, outwardly seeking, fundraising, resource generating charities, not-for-profits in our country that are really active and have some link to a health, tourism, sport-related field. So it's very, very challenging and crowded. And then activation is a big problem. And so we hear mostly this is from sponsors, is that interesting property, nice story, good cause. How the hell do I activate it without spending a fortune? So back to that branded content, these own properties. We need to provide those opportunities for brands to really get their attention and get their interest in what they want to, what they want to achieve. So those are the three kind of main themes that we saw across the board there. All right. And then to wrap up, I wanted to try to extend some of this stuff. And I spent some time thinking about this, extend some of this to the COVID situation. So the first bucket there is generally, and a lot of you probably been reading some of this stuff like I have and doing some different studies, which I'll talk in a second, is that there's been a stop in sponsorship. Like, largely speaking, it has stopped. And some data has come out, who knows how good it is, but talking about a $17 billion hit from $46 billion, so almost a 40% decrease in sports sponsorship globally. And if you translate that into, you know, global numbers of all fields, if you consider arts and festivals, et cetera, we're probably talking about a hit of $25 to $30 billion, if you believe those numbers. And then if you dig into it a little bit deeper, all industries are hit really hard, but some that you might expect and that are typically big spenders, financial services, the auto sector, retail, airline, anywhere from 37 to 61% decreases in their spending. And given that they already had probably committed a lot of that in the first 3 months of the year before COVID really hit, it's decimation. So obviously what I'm talking about today is a lot of it is thinking about what we're going to do post-COVID. The middle one here, and so we did a little study with SponsorshipX, presented that at a webinar a couple of weeks ago. It's online if you want to look at it, and doing another one in a couple of weeks. We collected some data from sponsorship industry professionals. Nowhere near as elaborate as the CSLS, but just some quick hit kind of field data from people. So it's not as nearly as reliable numbers, but very interesting to get a kind of a gauge on what's going on. And so sponsors had already said, this would be almost a month ago, sponsors had already said that they'd cut their sponsorship budgets by 30%. So this is their planned budget for 2020. And they'd cut their activation spend by 43.7%, almost 45%. Likely these numbers are going to keep going up as COVID keeps going on, although there's some positive signs right now that we might see some sport and stuff soon, and maybe in the fall we'll have some semblance of a return. So that's kind of going on. Properties and agencies, much larger. 45% decrease in revenues and a 52% billing. So again, it's not perfect data, but give you a sense of where people are feeling and what they're thinking about. I wanted to layer on top of that, there's a couple of big industry reports out there that are contradictory. So some of the big agencies have put out stuff and they're thinking about that, hey, by Q4, the US might have a return to a relatively normal economy. Others are talking about Q4 2021. So that's kind of at play. And the last thing was, and the last thing could have my picture on it. It's very much just me surmising, so there's no great data behind this. But my full expectation is that the 2019 data, which we're about to close soon, and hopefully if you have time, you can fill out, go to sponsorshiplandscape.ca and give us your data, is we're expecting to be very good, if not better than 2018, probably the best year of sponsorship in the history of Canada. Of course, 2020 is going to be the opposite. It's going to probably be lower than we saw in 2006. It's going to be very bad. But hopefully just a blip on the radar screen that we'll recover from. Digging into that, and I've done some research, and others of you probably looked into this too, on these mindsets that are out there and these forecasts. And there's really three different camps when you break down into the C19 kind of what's going to happen from it. And the first is very much, there's evidence of this in the past, and I mentioned the economic crisis of 8 and 9, is that an immediate boom follows. So you can imagine we get a treatment, we get a safe environment, et cetera, in October. People start traveling, people start investing, people start spending, people try to make up for lost time, they reschedule weddings, whatever the case may be, all this stuff happens, we'll see a boom. I'm definitely an optimist, I'm in that camp. A lot of people aren't. There's people that are in a camp that's called a cautious return. And we're starting to see this now. Like, oh yeah, you can golf again, but you can't, the clubhouse will be closed except for some takeout. You can only go one person every 20 minutes. You can't talk to each other. We're going to set up soccer, but it'll be fanless. And the NHL is going to play, but it'll be fanless. So this very cautious return, which is good, but no, won't have anywhere near the economic recovery that you would in a boom, certainly better than the bottom. And then there's a large group of people that believe that sport and tourism are two areas generally targeted that will be this massive paradigm shift, that airline tickets are going to be much more expensive and go back to being premium travel. Then we're going to start, the next step is going to go back to going to the drive-in, and we're going to have this complete paradigm shift in how we live and how we travel. And so there's people in each of these kind of camps that have different kind of beliefs, and each of those have very different outcomes for sport, for tourism, and for sponsorship, as you can imagine. So, and I think the results fit in that. So what can we pull around this for the study, from the study? One, and you saw this with the not-for-profit deep dive, sure, the environment has changed, but the point has not. The views from sponsors and agencies back to properties is that we're just not marketing well enough. And so we have to crank it up. And what better motivation than to have to go through what we're doing right now? So you can take advantage of this time, build digital platforms, find more creative ways to do things, find ways to build assets and own properties and places where they can do their branded content and get things out there and do exciting things and do really neat stuff. Get ready for that. So elevate your web, elevate your digital, elevate your social presence. So you're there, you're on the channels that reach people. You're probably not gonna be able to do much with it right now. I mean, everyone's watching Netflix and playing Fortnite, but how do you get people to do it? Well, you have to have the infrastructure in place. So now you've got the time, potentially the resources from a human resource perspective, maybe people that are on the subsidy program that don't have much work to do. Reallocate, you know, pivot, all these kind of things we hear other industries doing. We should be doing that too and get on that right away. And then if you are doing anything, both pre and post COVID, as that was so crystal clear in that not-for-profit thing, and if you've got a cause-related component, which a lot of you do, have those sponsors focused on cause, focus on sponsors whose cause is related to yours, or like a number of sport properties have been doing, change your whole purview right now and help frontline workers with fundraising programs and help food insecurity organizations and agencies and associations and charities with your programs and get sponsors to align with that. And so that was my kind of shot at kind of extending it a little bit. And I'll do one last call if you don't mind, and if you've got time, we'd love to have your input on last year. Obviously that won't help us look at COVID just yet, but next year we'll do that once this is all hopefully done at sponsorshiplandscape.ca. And that would be my talk.
Very good. Thanks, Norm. We've got a couple of questions that have come in. The first is someone looking to understand the difference between regional and local sponsorships, whether there's any data that you could share on that.
Yeah, great question. And the first thing I should have maybe said this clear up front. When we say things like regional versus local, or activation versus rights fees, or cause versus sport, like you think of CIBC Run for the Cure, where does that fall? We use attribution. So when we say regional, we give a bit of a definition, but it's basically at the respondent to tell us, hey, I'm a regional property, or hey, I'm a local property. So we say in there that a region is more than your city. Think about a county, a part of a province, et cetera. So someone who would operate in the GTA would be regional. Someone who operates in the city of Mississauga would be local. But again, there's going to be bias, and it's how they define them. How do you justify that? Well, this is marketing research in general, as a lot of you know, is if you're operating as a regional property, you're likely to be operating as a cause. Like, so it's based on that whole premise. Okay, so I just want to clarify that. In terms of regional versus local, we've seen real distinct data this year. And I highlighted a number of it there, where there's growth in local sponsorship investment and shrinkage in regional. So we surmise that, and again, this is something we have to follow up with more detail, is that brands are very interested in reaching people. And you saw they told us their number one ROI from activation this year was product sampling, pre-COVID obviously, product sampling, hospitality, and hosting. So they want to get their offerings into the hands of people. I use the Nissan test drive example. They want people at CFL games to test drive their truck sitting next to a former player or a cheerleader, right? That's what drives sales. That's what they want to do. So they see these smaller local properties as an ability to do that. And then so the regional, provincial, multi-provincial, all were down, and then national and international were up. And the reason there, the idea there is that they were then seeking reach and not worried about the kind of experiential stuff. So real, I would say the reason is that experiential difference.
Okay. When we talked about the difference between professional sport and amateur sport, there's quite a gap there in terms of the investment. Was the servicing element a part of the analysis, and to what extent Is that gap related in some sense to the servicing of those sponsors?
That's a great question. I actually wrote a white paper on this one because it's so interesting and it goes very deep. So if you look back a little bit, when we were in like 2011, 2012 of the study, as you'll remember, Rick, Olympic sport and amateur sport were the same. They had the same proportion of Canadian investment. So even considering there's a bit of margin of error in our data, it's pro sport has blown amateur sport out of the water is the only way really to characterize it. And servicing would be one element thereof. But activation would be one element, evaluation would be one element, reach, sophistication, branded content. They have really just, and there was a bit of a halo effect from the Vancouver Games that probably brought us up a bit, amateur sport, but we've just been outclassed on every metric. And you don't have to do a study, the study kind of articulates it, but you just go look out there. Look what the NHL has done since 2014. Up to 2014, you would characterize, and I did this publicly, Rick probably did it publicly, that the NHL was old school. They weren't doing anything cool. They weren't digital. They were counting on rink boards. They're still selling tickets. They have changed. The last 6 years, they have killed it. And their marketing numbers support that. And their revenue share numbers support that. And MLS has followed. The NLL is doing a good job. The CFL has really done well with their marketing. They're in a challenging position, but they've done very well with their marketing. MLS, I mean, a huge success story in Canada. The clubs across the league, the Jays, the Raptors. I mean, you go down the pro sport mosaic, they're really doing great stuff. And what have we done in amateur sport? The COC's done very well. NSOs, and they'll tell you this, are struggling. PSOs are really struggling. If you look at the budgets, any province of PSO that are government funded, you're talking about numbers that are well over 80% across the board. So yeah, I think servicing's one element, but you could talk about anyone.
One last one here, Norm. You mentioned the, I guess the top couple of items related to sponsors in terms of what they were looking for, hospitality and sampling. Where does television kind of fit into the mix there?
And so media. The exposure, it's. Let me just go to that one. So when we're talking about these things, we're talking about activation techniques. So we're not saying TV is an activation technique, but television would be something that would be captured largely under advertising. And so whether it's TV or streaming or radio, so we saw advertising do very well. And I showed the one chart that had the black line of advertising kind of go up and down. It's kind of yinged and yanged, I think, with the life of professional sports. So early days, it was the number one. Then it very much dropped off, and then it came back. And I think advertising is used in a much more broader sense today to refer to any kind of integrated promotion that you do in a television, a streaming, a radio, a web, a digital kind of thing where you pay for space. And so we've seen a real positive increase in TV. I think maybe what the question's getting at is the decline in cable cutting, but those people are replacing a lot of that with streaming, and streaming and online and over the top and direct stuff. And we're seeing obviously a huge renaissance of TV right now during COVID. Will everybody stop watching again once we go back to regular life? If we do, depending on those scenarios, who knows? But we did see pre-COVID a really positive spot for advertising. And it goes back to that other question, the first question, there's this bimodal thing, right? So those that are interested in local, those two at the top. Those that are interested in the national and reach, they're interested in number three, which is advertising, which would include TV.
Great. Thanks very much. Just a couple of wrap-up notes. Thanks very much, Norm.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
As usual. And we're looking forward to the next iteration of this study and look at what the potential impacts are on, as it relates to the to the pandemic situation. Just a reminder that the video and the PowerPoint presentation will be available on our website either later today or certainly early tomorrow. Just a reminder that a couple of our upcoming webinars, June the 4th, we have crisis communications session. Join Barb McDonald, Sylvie Bigra, and Martin Richard for that one. And on June 11th, we have the kind of insight to the esports landscape. And we have Vlad Marinescu, who's the recently elected president of the International Esports Federation, who's going to join us. In addition, if you're not already connected with us on social media, please do so. Either on our LinkedIn site or at CDN Sport Tourism to stay up to date with all of the news. Thanks once again for joining us, and have a great rest of day. Thank you.